Good afternoon and welcome to Speaking Truth to Empire on KFCF 88.1 FM, Free Speech Radio for Central California. My name is Danny Yassin and I am an anti-war and anti-empire activist. Mike Rhodes is at the controls. Today is February 15, 2017, third Wednesday of the month. Every third Wednesday from 3 to 3:30 p.m., I interview authors, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policies and the actions of the military-industrial surveillance congressional complex. These actions have severe consequences not only for the people in the U.S., but many people in other countries. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today, we have Sarah Thompson on telephone with us. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. Good to be here.
Thank you for being my guest on Speaking Truth to Empire. Sarah Thompson is the Executive Director of Christian Peacemakers Teams. She graduated with a Master's of Divinity from Anabaptist Mennonite Biblical Seminary in 2011 and summa cum laude from Spelman College in 2006 with majors in Comparative Women's Studies and International Studies, and a minor in Spanish. While at Spelman, she co-founded the Atlanta University Center Peace Coalition, an anti-war group with strong ecological and feminist critiques of U.S. military involvement. She was also Student Government Association president. After graduating, she was a Fulbright scholar in Argentina, focusing on civil society edification and the North American representative for Mennonite World Conference's Youth and Young Adult Executive Committee. As part of the international peace movement, as a public speaker and community organizer, she is adept at bringing people together across lines of difference and building momentum for positive social change. As an inter-spiritual theologian, she feels called to the discipleship practice of building partnership that transform violence and oppression. Sarah, I understand you will be in Fresno this coming weekend, and I'm looking forward to meet you and to hear you speak at the Unitarian Universalist Church here. Let's start with CPT. Some of our listeners are familiar with Christian Peacemaker Teams, but many are not. So tell us about CPT, what it is, and what's its mission.
Wonderful. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in as you go about your lives on this day. Actually, it's probably important to acknowledge this day, February 15. This is part of how I got my start in CPT. In February 15, 2003, was, at that point, the largest global anti-military, anti-empire protest when so many people in 2003 came out to say no to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. And that was a moment where I had a chance to join this intergenerational family of people who have been thinking about what it means to build partnerships to transform violence and oppression and to work toward a world of nonviolence, a world where we can understand differences in ways that don't need to be where people don't need to be eliminated for their beliefs, and where we share resources much more equitably. And Christian Peacemaker Teams works at this by coming alongside those who are most impacted by lethal violence and by the wars waged by imperialist countries. And so we were, at that time in 2003, in Iraq, working with Voices in the Wilderness and local partners. We helped surround water tanks and make sure that civilians were also protected in the midst of that, quote-unquote, shock and awe bombing that happened at that time. And that's some of the work that we do, is that we go towards where people who are already in harm's way are trying to organize and nonviolently resist the oppression that they face. And doing this with an international group of people, it can assist in leveraging what's happening on the local level. And so we've been working in Iraq since that time, now currently in the Kurdish north alongside those who are being displaced through the increasing number of multinational oil corporations there. And by seeing those connections, we're able to work with, again, local community leaders and grassroots folks who are making real change in the daily life and want to get their struggles and their voice amplified within the international community. So CPTers come from 16 different countries, predominantly U.S. And Canada, but all over. And we have a physical presence in areas where lethal and structural violence are happening.
Give us a little bit history. How long Christian Peacemaker Tees had been around?
So we began, we were spurred on towards organizing by this question that was posed to pacifist Christians, actually, in 1984. And the question was said to them, what if you pacifist Christians trained as hard for peace as militaries train for war? And what if you were willing to sacrifice for that peace as much as we expect soldiers to sacrifice for it? Like, what could happen? And if you're not willing to do that, then you can't say that you're a pacifist and let other people go and kill on your behalf. You have to be willing to put yourself out there, to be trained, to be smart, to think about strategic options for violence and conflict reduction. And so, a group of people, people of faith, took that on and said, yeah, we do believe that love and goodness can overcome evil. That's part of our deep story. So let's see what it will take to form teams of people that can work together and can be like these little brigades. And so we began to take delegations to places like Vieques, where the United States was testing bombing there on an island right outside of Puerto Rico. And we were there with locals as well to disrupt the ongoing bombing practices that were destroying that beautiful island. We took delegations places like Washington, D.C., to look, for example, at how the war on drugs was criminalizing black and brown people in particular ways, and the way that that structural violence was showing up in the penal system. We took delegations to Afghanistan, to Bosnia, to Iraq. And over time, we have developed some long-term presences in a number of places. And currently, that means we have four long-term presences, and one of them is in Palestine, where we walk with children to and from school in the city of Hebron, the old city of Halil, and those children that need to go through military checkpoints on their way to school and face soldiers with guns and settlers who are agitating them. We are international observers in that context, as well as making sure those kids get to school safely and documenting whether or not the apparatus of the military occupation, like documenting what it does. So it's said to be used for security, but oftentimes the children's backpacks are not actually checked on the way to school in these checkpoints. So it seems like it's more about control than about security in many ways. And so we collect that raw data and we share what we see with the world. We also do work with Israeli anti-military occupation activists and peacemakers, people who are recognizing that for them, the ethical core of Judaism is at stake in trying to end the occupation. And so we are building bridges as well to look at how the different stories of our faith can influence us to choose nonviolence, to choose cooperation, to choose justice. So that's what we're doing in Palestine. Dan, do you want me to talk about the other projects too?
Yes, we can move on. Yeah, we can move on to... tell us about the mission. You, our first how many different missions you have going on? I think you may have mentioned that at this point.
Well, we definitely call them projects or programs because we respect everyone's path to God, and we're not missionaries. We are a Christian identified organization, but we have multi-faith membership and people who are spiritual and non-religious. We just recognize that as people doing this work, all of our actions are penultimate. You know, they are dependent on the universe, on everyone else, on unseen forces, on faith to be able to reach out and to continue to work, like even when it looks like the world's going to pieces around you, but that if you keep on working for peace, it's worth it. So in Colombia, we have been accompanying small farmers for a long time. During the times of displacement, we were documenting violence that was visited upon communities by paramilitary and guerrilla forces, and those communities who were seeking to make zones of peace could use the international, like, protective presence that would bring visibility to their situation, and if they were more visible, they were less likely to be targeted. And we also did documentation there and have continued to collect information on how, now that the ratification of the refined accord has happened, what's sweeping in to pick up all this land that people were displaced from are many multinational corporations. And these multinational corporations are pushing, again, small farmers off land that now the farmers have deeds to. And so we come alongside those farmers to make sure that their rights are observed and that they have access to this subsistence farming. And this connects with how imperialism is so economic. Many of those multinationals are coming into monocrop palm oil or monocrop something else for export, and that those exports are going to the global north. And so it's really important as an organization of majority people from the global north to do our part in reducing economic violence that is both structural, and then many of these multinational corporations have private security with them, and the private security have different lines of accountability, if any accountability at all. And so we are there to witness what is happening to the villagers and to work together with them to take nonviolent direct action and make other creative community methods in order to come together to be able to live peaceably. So that's Colombia. And in addition to Palestine and Colombia, and I mentioned northern Iraq, villagers who are resisting the oil companies taking their land. We also are working alongside indigenous peoples in North America. This, of course, does mean Standing Rock, but even for a decade before Standing Rock, we were working just north of there in Kenora, up to Chipilwagunk, Grassy Narrows. We were working with now is the longest-running blockade in North America, which is a group of people who is making sure that the ongoing ecological destruction of their land and the cultural devastation would stop. They won the rights. The folks in Grassy Narrows won the rights, Treaty 3 territory, to hunt and fish as before. However, then a multinational paper mill went in, and the government allowed this, and even though the indigenous folks had won the right to hunt and fish as before, the paper mill was upstream, and in this paper processing, mercury was used and also leaked into the river. And so people were fishing downstream of that and getting very sick. And instead of, they had won the right to hunt and fish as before, so they had the right to do that, and the mercury poisoning almost, made them have to stop. But instead, what needed to stop was that paper mill. And so they ran a blockade of those paper milling trucks, and also because when you do cut down a lot of trees, also the animals go away, so you can't hunt either. So just trying to protect, the indigenous folks called us to come alongside them. CPT only goes where it's invited. So it was a process of learning to listen well to those who are the traditional landholders and to activate with them in the way that they saw fit. So those are our projects, Northern Iraq, Kurdistan, and Palestine, Colombia, and alongside indigenous peoples. We have a couple other short-term projects that I can speak about in a bit.
Okay. You're listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on KFCF 88.1 FM Free Speech Radio for Central California. We are speaking with Sarah Thompson, the Executive Director of Christian Peacemakers Team. Sarah, as I looked at your website, I understand that you have involvement with the people protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline. So just tell us about that. How were you involved and what were you able to do there?
One of the calls that came out from Standing Rock was for people of prayer and practice to show up. And what that means to me is that it also recognizes the interconnection of spirituality and activism. It doesn't need to be one or the other. In fact, when spirituality and activism are linked, there is a deeper power that can come from taking a stand. When prayer is action and action is prayer, and so we responded to the invitation with a number of CPTers who went, and we participated with them in actions that were taken at camp, right, and as kind of the spaces of the flashpoints, but also in all of the things that it took to make that living resistance camp survive. So that included the ways in which the meals were cooked and how they were served. It included child care. It included making sure that we were attending deep conversations about what it means to decolonize North America. The principles that we learned there was, and that we respect in all of CPT work is to be indigenous-centered, to allow those who are most impacted by structural violence to lead and to learn and respect their experience. And at Standing Rock, they also asked everyone to be of use. It's not just about going to the front lines where the quote-unquote action is, but to recognize that all of the actions that we take on a daily basis, how we greet each other, how do we order our time, how do we use our money, all of those are part of whether or not we are speaking truth to empire or whether we're letting empire direct our thoughts. So indigenous-centered, being of use, building a new legacy. It's really important for Christian Peacemaker Teams. Another part of our work is transforming spiritual communities to have healthier theology that deeply respects the land, traditional landowners, that respects women, that respects queer folks, that respects those from other pasts. And so we were able to return to our many sponsoring communities of CPT with information about what it means for us to live as settlers in a better and a new way at this time. And then the last one is bring it home. So Standing Rock is everywhere. There are pipelines everywhere as well. And so giving people the new skills that they learned from being out there in the North Dakota winter translates back into how we live anywhere we find ourselves. It means knowing the indigenous people of the land that you're on. If you do nothing else after this radio show, if you don't already know information about the people of Central California and the big lake that used to be there and all the things that happened to your people, that's really important to learn about. So bringing it home. So that's some of the things that we did. Followed indigenous leadership. We were of use. We sought to build a new legacy. And we're seeking to bring it home to our constituents.
Sarah, we have Devin Carroll on line with us, so he will tell us about your appearance at the Unitarian Universalist Church. Hi, Devin.
Hello, Dan. Hello, Sarah. Looking forward to seeing you in Fresno on Sunday. I just want to mention that Sarah will be speaking for the Town Hall event on Sunday at the Unitarian Church, which is on alluvial between Chestnut and Willow on the north side. And Sarah will be speaking at the Town Hall, which will start after the services at 12:15 and last about an hour, I think. So hope everyone can come out. Everyone's welcome. And we'll hear Sarah and her plans to bring peace and justice to the world.
Thank you, Devin.
Yes.
Sarah, let's get to, okay, I want to ask you a couple of more questions. You work, CPT works in some of the areas where people are facing worst form of structural and lethal violence. You find grassroots individual, as you said, and the organization you have told describing CPT earlier, that are non-violently facing this violence. Take us through the steps that you go through to decide where you are going to send your teams.
For sure. I'll definitely talk about that. Also, just to say for the town hall meeting, we're going to look at what bringing it home means now for this era that we're in and some of the rapid response networks that are developing within the United States in order to keep one another safe and to protect the most vulnerable among us. Because I think many people are waking up to the sense that what we've been doing overseas for a long time is now really coming home. It has been coming home our communities of color for a really long time, but now there's a really deep, widespread knowledge of how much civil liberties and human rights are so tenuous, and we'll talk together about what this moment might mean for us and creative ways that we can get involved. And really, that's what communities all around the world have been doing for a long time. Even if people are forced to leave as refugees, they're still carrying with them this deep desire for survival and thriving and community life and rhythms. And so people hear about us from word of mouth. For example, the communities that we accompany in Colombia now heard about us from other work that we did up the river in Colombia. Word travels that way. You can find us on the internet at cpt.org. And once we get an invitation, then we start lots and lots of conversations. And those conversations include discerning whether or not having international presence there that heightens visibility, if that is helpful for the movement at the time or not. And we do that by, like, sending an exploratory delegation, one that goes and visits and meets with communities. We don't ever work with just like one single leader or one community. We work with coalitions of people. And this is pretty awesome because it means that we're working with folks who are already organized. So no one's really dependent on the CPT presence, but we are able to amplify what local groups are already doing and amplify it in such a way so that the violence that's happening to them cannot be ignored and cannot be silenced. So we look at whether or not the skill set that CPT has and what's happening at that particular moment in the struggle, whether or not it's a fit. There are many organizations that do great work in the areas of relief and sustainable development, but CPT doesn't do material aid. We just do a very specific sense of accompaniment and then also documentation and communications work. That's video, that's interviews, that's like I said, walking to and from school or walking to and from your fields when you're in fear of danger, and some other unarmed civilian protection. So we see whether or not our skill set is a good fit at the time. And the communities will let us know. In Baghdad, for example, around 2007, the partners in Baghdad said, you know what, like, you all have been really helpful here, but at this point, it's getting more dangerous for us to be associated with you as an international organization, because even though you are not aligned with your empire or any of your governments, it's hard to know that before people talk to you. And in this context of war, people are going to make those assumptions, and we're starting to get pressure. And so they said, so can you go? And we said, sure, we can go, no problem. And they said, we'll go up to the north, because some of our colleagues in the north heard about your work, and it seems like that's a place where you could have more leverage at that point. So that's when I got introduced to the amazing folks who are doing civil society work in Kurdistan, and so that's how we proceeded. One thing that we did in Baghdad before, which is probably worth mentioning, is that we were doing things that if a local did them, that would be really dangerous for someone to do. So we were interviewing people who were coming out of the U.S. and British and other detention facilities during the early years of that war, and many were reporting torture and PTSD, and we noted all these things, and we made a huge report and took it to anyone who would receive that report, to embassies, to the big NGOs. We sent it everywhere. And really nothing happened too much at first. But part of our work is about being faithful. Effectiveness is really important too, but like we're really trying to be faithful to the call to show up alongside those who are most marginalized and know that that in and of itself is legitimate work. So though, when those pictures from Abu Ghraib broke, you remember that picture of that one gentleman standing on that chair with his two fingers connected to wires and covered in a black sheet. When that picture broke, that was not a CPT picture. But then a whole bunch of news media and a lot of people wanted to know, hey, who knew this was going on? What was happening? Why was this allowed to continue? CPT and the other NGOs that had gathered all of that data and given it to the embassies and everyone about 6 months earlier, everyone like turned to that report to validate and corroborate what was being demonstrated in that picture. And so we were one of the NGOs instrumental in breaking that story. So that's kind of how we work. And it's just a reminder that the small actions that we're taking each day, we never know the type of impact that it can have. And so once we align our actions to resist empire, to listen to the most marginalized and take their leadership and really figure out how to amplify the voice of peace, such as this radio show is doing, the ripple effects really do make a difference.
Sarah, with about a minute left, tell us how people can get involved with CPT or help with the work that you are doing.
Fantastic. So especially in this era of the travel ban, we want to invite people to go to those locations. So we take delegations each year to Palestine, Israel, to Iraq, to Colombia, to where refugees are crossing in Greece, and alongside indigenous people. So come on a delegation, allocate your money and your time to go and visit our world neighbors, to learn their stories firsthand, to walk alongside them and see what type of changes they're trying to make. So that's number one. You get involved with the delegation. If you like the delegation and you like CPT, then you can come to the training that we have to offer and go deep into what it means to be a peacemaker in the world at this time. And that's like a month-long training. Like the military has their boot camp, so we have our peacemaker boot camp. You can do that. And then after that, we've got jobs. We have jobs available for people to do this long-term work and be supported.
I think, Sarah, we are running out of time. Thank you so much for being my guest on the show, and I'll see you Sunday.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Okay. You have been listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on KFCF 88.1 FM Free Speech Radio for Central California. And we were speaking with Sarah Thompson, the Executive Director of the Christian Peacemakers Team. My name is Dan Yassin, host of the show, and I'll see you next month, third Wednesday.